Good evening, and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmaier, coming to you live as I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. New York time, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you're listening to us live, you're at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. Today is August 30th, 2012. I have a privilege today of having as a guest the founder of the Cycles Research Institute, Ray Tomes. Ray is coming in live from New Zealand. We're going to talk about the Cycles Research Institute, which has as its mission to discover, understand, and explain the true nature and origin of cycles, to solve the mystery of recurrent rhythms observed in natural and social sciences, and to instruct others in the application of this new knowledge for the greater good. On the program tonight, we're going to talk about the Cycles Research Institute, talk a little bit about the foundation for the study of cycles and how they came about. We're also going to discuss what's the point in studying cycles and some of the main discoveries in cycles research. We're going to move on to climate change and cycles. What do long-term climate and solar cycles tell us about the cause of recent temperature changes, and what do changes in CO2 and temperature tell us about cause and effect? We may touch on harmonics theory, and we will touch on the cyclic influence in the market and the economy. So here from the Cycles Research Institute, which you can find at cyclesresearchinstitute.org, is its founder, Ray Tomes. Ray, are you there?
I am, David. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for being on Cycles Radio. We want to talk a little bit about the institute that you founded. It has the support of cycles researchers from the around the world as part of your advisory board, and which is compiling and disseminating information for our edification and for our understanding. So, Ray, when did the Cycles Research Institute come into being?
In the early 2000s, we started it, which was really as a result of the fact that the Foundation for the Study of Cycles had gone defunct in the 1990s. But perhaps we could go back to the beginning of how that came about, and I could tell you the story of
Let's do a timeline, Ray, please.
Yeah.
Do.
So, although there were cycles research of many forms, as a discipline of its own right, the beginning can be traced into the early 1900s. Two things happened independently. One was that Edward Dewey, who was the founder of the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, he was an economist appointed by President Hoover to advise on the cause of the 1929 crash. He was fresh out of university and was recognized as a very bright chap. He said he talked to about 100 economists and got 100 different answers. Mm. And the only answer that he believed was the correct one was, "Edward, we really don't know." And so at that stage, he lost faith in economic theory, and he began to look around for some alternative. And he was told advised to study how rather than why cycles occurred in things and these changes occurred. And he began to do that, and he found that to be very good advice. So he constructed records of the past events leading up to that crash, and he found that, in fact, you could have had predicted, if you'd studied cycles, you could have predicted the crash in 1929. Now, just to give you a comparison of that, later on, when I was doing my own work, in 1986, I did predict a share crash for about September 1987, and it did happen, in fact, in October. It was 2 years after that I heard about the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, and later I got hold of Dewey's analysis of cycles in the stock market that was done in the 1960s. When I projected them forward, they predicted the 1987 share crash. All the cycles came together in a down phase at that time. So more than 20 years ahead, that could be predicted. And I think this is a fascinating thing about cycles, that when you do get some very good ones, they continue to work time after time. Now, at about the same time as Edward Dewey was doing this, There was a group of scientists who met in 1931 at Matamec in Canada to discuss biological cycles. And they were looking at things. There were some very strange things that went on with animal populations. One of the most famous cases is the Canadian lynx. And the Canadian lynx population, they were trapped for fur. And their records go back to the 1700s by the Hudson Bay Company. And over several hundred years there, the population, or the number they could catch, which they take to be a reflection of the population, would multiply by about 10 over a period of about 5 years, and then divide by 10 in the next 5 years. So you have these huge swings in population. And they found that it mainly fed on a particular rabbit, the snowshoe rabbit. And it was considered to be a predator-prey cycle. But later on, with the study of cycles, it was found that this 9.6-year cycle that they found in both of these animals also occurred in a variety of other things, not only in Canada, but elsewhere also. And it was clear that something much more was going on. And this was the basis of this conference of mainly biologists, but including some others as well, of the scientists. And it wasn't until 1940 that, when Edward Dewey was studying more about cycles, that he found out about this Matamec conference. And he immediately got in touch with Copley Amory, who was the organizer of that. And by 1941, they had got together all of the scientists and the business people from the two groups and agreed to form the Foundation for the Study of Cycles. And it was clear that there were certain groups of things that often move together, like we said, a number of animal populations. But the 9.6-year cycle wasn't the only one. There were other cycles of different animals that might be 4 years and other periods. So the Foundation for the Study of Cycles had a mission, essentially the same as what you described Cycles Research Institute to have now. And they studied natural and social sciences, as well as business and economics and markets.
Yes.
The early list of the directors and the advisors for the foundation reads like a who's who of the 1940s. There were many quite well accepted scientists within universities in many different disciplines. There were businessmen from the largest companies. There was the vice president of the United States at one time was in there. So it was at this time it was a very exciting and well accepted idea.
Yeah.
Now, it seems that everything comes in cycles. Edward Dewey stated that there's been really nothing that for which a decent amount of data is gathered that doesn't have cycles in it. And part of one of the things that has cycles is the interest in cycles, and it seems to come and go also. So that by the 1990s, the foundation had begun to concentrate a bit more on market cycles in its research. And it had a very unfortunate series of events because Martin Armstrong, who was in charge of the foundation, he was the director of the board.
Yeah.
He got arrested for embezzlement of funds, and he spent a lot of time in jail and disputes, and I'm not sure where that got to in the end. But the result of that was it had a dreadful effect on the foundation, which was then dissolved.
By association, because the activities for which the SEC investigated had nothing to do with the foundation at all. That was in his own practice.
That's right.
But it's because he held a high position in the foundation, too,
yes.
The mere association, the foundation itself was never even accused of doing anything wrong.
No, that's right. But as a result, the directors felt very uncomfortable with this connection. And so they agreed to dissolve the foundation. And so that was in the 1990s, the late 90s. So in the early 2000s, I was making a trip overseas. And on that trip, I met with four past members, including committee members of the foundation. And I had email contact with a number of others. Unfortunately, at that stage, we didn't have the list of members, so it wasn't possible to get in touch with everyone. But we agreed to start a new organization, and we decided that we didn't want to use the Foundation for Study of Cycles name because it had been tarnished by this Armstrong Association. So we called it the Cycles Research Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Later, and we had the same sort of objectives, but we didn't try to have an office and things like that. That was the long-term plan, was to get all those things happening again. But the short-term plan was to have a presence on the internet, to collect data, to have programs to analyze for cycles, and to exchange things and to build up a website, because we could do that with very little funds.
Yes.
And so we began to do that. And then the website of the Foundation for the Study of Cycles reappeared after a few years, and they claimed to be the original organization, which we have never accepted. But we did try to, we said, let's all work together, because we don't need two organizations on cycles. And after some initial difficulties, where we were told that we didn't have the right to have documents from the foundation on our website, we did agree to work together, but it proved in the long term impossible to work with one of the members of the foundation, whose standard of honesty is not the same as some of our other people. And so we decided to go separately again. We have a letter from the son of Edward Dewey, stating quite clearly that it was the board decision to dissolve the foundation and to put all the copyrights into the public domain. And so we are happy now that we don't need to work with the foundation in order to do that. And our objectives are very much not to make money, but to share cycles knowledge. And so we don't even take any money in from anybody. All of our projects are financed by people who wish to give money to do those particular projects, and that's how it works. So that's, I think it's necessary to make that clear, because people may get confused about why there are two organizations.
Yes, the Cycles Research Institute is an autonomous organization that was born of its own during the time that there was the foundation had closed down, had been closed. Even the new group, using the name the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, whatever that is, was yet to even come into existence. That started around 2004. Well, you were already established.
Yes.
An independent group with a somewhat altruistic mission to have a world repository and a central point for this kind of research, so it can be, you know, used for the benefit of all those who wish to further it.
Yes, that's right. So now that's been, it's not easy when there's not funds. You depend on people who've got the time to do things. And I'm lucky enough to be in that position myself. But and I go around and ask people, you know, can you do a paper on this or that, and get things from different people. And sometimes people submit things. So we built up the website in that way.
And the website is at cyclesresearchinstitute.org.
That's right. Yes.
Okay.
And the site itself has material, and there's also a forum for people to, where people can join and ask questions or tell about their own research in cycles. And there's also a blog where invited people can put articles there as well. So we keep all of those, try to keep any interesting material that's published on cycles by people that may be in some particular area of science or business or markets, who does some interesting work relating, has a cycles interest. We try to report that in there as well, so people can keep up with all the different aspects of it. I think that it's very important at this stage. I mentioned that there was some commonality between the different animal populations and so on.
Yes.
But one of the things that Edward Dewey found in his long period of research was that often the same cycles periods popped up in things that seemed to have nothing to do with each other. And he eventually established quite a number of particular cycles periods that turned up in many things, and he made a list of those. And that's and sometimes these would cross over from fields that might be scientific into markets, or they might be in one market and some other totally different market, or two different areas of science or whatever. But this pattern of change, it's quite clear that something more was going on than what we're usually aware of. Now, I think it's good to mention here that Edward Dewey was doing all of this in America.
Yeah.
I was coordinating this. There was another person in the same period. He was born just 2 years after Dewey. Was Alexander Chizhevsky, was born in Russia.
Yeah.
Now, because of the difficulty of the situation in Russia, he eventually had to leave Russia because he'd seen that, for example, Kondratiev disappeared.
Yes.
Because of things he said. And so it wasn't correct to say that things were caused by cycles, because the position of the government is that every change and social change was caused by the struggle of the working class. And so he had to leave the. But all, unfortunately, most of his work is published in Russian and French, and so people in English-speaking countries are not so familiar with it. But I want to give one quote from him, because this quote, I think, summarizes both poetically and scientifically accurate of what is going on in the universe.
Yes.
He says, "Life is a phenomenon. Its production is due to the influence of the dynamics of the cosmos on a passive subject. It lives due to dynamics. Each oscillation of organic pulsation is coordinated with the cosmic heart in the grandiose whole of nebulas, stars, the sun, and the planet." Now, there's so much in there. The fact that life is a passive subject, we like to think of ourselves as the cause of all things. But, for example, Chuzhevsky had found that there's an 11-year cycle in wars, and that this existed in the sunspots. So what he's saying is, The oscillations in the sun, that magnetic cycle in the sun, was influencing human behavior. And we like to think that we're the cause, but in actual fact, we're just dancing to the tune that's coming from the cosmos. And when I say dancing to the tune, this sort of thing has been used in ancient times by different people to describe what's happening.
Yep.
And it's not really understood, and it sounds poetic. But in actual fact, we find that this whole thing, let's go back to Dewey now, and we find that what he discovered was that that there were patterns in the cycles that are exactly the same as in music. There were often cycles that are exactly double the period of other cycles, or triple, or multiples of those. So it might be 2 times 3 or 2 times 2 times 3. And he discovered this whole pattern of cycles periods based... from a starting point of 17.75 years, he divided it by 2 and multiplied it by 2. He divided it by 3 and multiplied by 3. And he found that most of the common cycles periods that had been found fitted into this pattern. Now, my own work...
Harmonics,
yes. My own work, I had been studying cycles in the New Zealand economy to do forecasts. I hadn't heard about the foundation of the study of cycles. And I had a period of 35.6 years and a number of cycles that were a quarter of that, a fifth, a sixth, and an eighth of that. Now, in Dewey's table, he had 35.5 years, and the periods he had were all similarly, only different by one in about the third decimal place. So the same thing. I was finding using different data in a different country, in a different time period, and finding exactly what Dewey had found before. This pattern is very real and has been rediscovered by a number of other people quite independently of each other, and they always come up to the same answer.
Good heavens.
Now, I want to do a quote from Edward Dewey, because I think this is a really important one as it relates, it's related to the one by Chuzhevsky. He says, "Insofar as cycles are meaningful, all science that has been developed in the absence of cycles knowledge is inadequate and partial. Thus, if cyclic forces are real, any theory of economics or sociology or history or medicine or climatology that ignores non-chance rhythms is manifestly incomplete, as medicine was before the discovery of germs."
Uh-huh.
So I think that's a very powerful statement.
Yeah.
But, for example, I wanted to talk to with you about later about the about climatology. Here's Dewey mentioning in 1967 that if you don't look at cycles, you can't understand climatology. And I want to demonstrate that that is indeed so.
Please do.
Today, right this day, you know, 45 years later. So let's see. Shall we go into that now, climate?
Yes, but before we go on that, I want the callers to know that in the second half of the program, we will be taking calls if you have any questions. So you might want to make a note of this number. To call in with your questions, you can call 347-884-9593. That's 347-884-9593. So, Ray, did Dewey see things in the cycles that might relate to what we're seeing in climate changes? Did some of the things he say then still hold true now, these years later?
He didn't. This whole thing about climate change, or as caused by humans, hadn't begun in his time. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the 1970s, he died in 1979. In the 1970s, the very same institutes that are now claiming that we're going to have runaway hothouse were claiming we were on the brink of entering a new ice age.
Yeah.
So their position has changed, and the reason for that is quite simple: that there's about a 60-year cycle. In climate that goes up and down. Now, Dewey had some, we have got a lot better data now, but he did have some data. For example, the Nile flood levels and stuff had been recorded going back several thousand years. But in the last few decades, we've got tremendous data from ice cores in the Antarctic and in Greenland and so on that go back hundreds of thousands and even millions of years. And we've got methods that will measure the isotope ratios in those that give records about the past temperatures on Earth and about the effects of the sun.
Indeed.
That we can make proxies for these things that give us a tremendous lot more data. I'm actually amazed at how people like Chozevsky, Raymond Wheeler also, who talked about long cycles in the climate, he made a specialty of that, and he talks about 500 and 1,000 year periods of cycles in the climate. Chozevsky mentioned a 355-year period. Now, these things, I'll want to mention two analyses that I've done from data that have been collected by people. One of them is of carbon-14 in tree rings.
Yeah.
Now, that's considered to be a proxy for solar effects, which quite clearly affect the climate on Earth. Now, in that one, there's the record is for a period of 11,000 years of reconstruction of sunspot numbers based on carbon-14 tree rings. And this one, with 11,000 years data, you can get a very accurate measures of the periods of cycles present in that. Now, this analysis has been done with the CATS software, which was developed by Cycles Research Institute, and is freely available on our website for people to do their own research. We want
Ray, let me ask you a question
encourage...
about that before, as you continue. You're talking about the CATS, CATS Cycles Analysis Program, that someone can go to this website at cyclesresearchinstitute.org, download it for free, and be able to do cycles analysis of the things that would take forever with a calculator right on their computer with this free program.
Yes, and along with that, you will get hundreds of time series that have been collected. They include things from scientific things like these ones about that are related to solar things, related to climate. There's many other different scientific ones, astronomical and earth-based.
Yep.
There are biological. There are other ones like that about diseases. There are some things about markets, about the economy, and that there are a whole collection of different things. And some of these are very long period data that might only be measured every 10 years, going back for hundreds of thousands of years. Some of them are for 1,000 years or 100 years. Some of them monthly series or weekly or daily. And some of them are even much faster things, measurements that are made very, very fast that show very quick cycles. So there's you can study all sorts of things with that. And there's the means there to put your own data in.
A lot of work being done at the Institute, the Cycles Research Institute. It's fantastic. But pray continue, Ray.
So back to the carbon-14. This shows a number of cycles, one of which I mentioned there's one cycle that it gives us 2,245 years. Now, a number of people have said before that there's a 2,300-year cycle in climate.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're finding in the solar effects 2,245 years. Now, it has been proposed there is a 2,300-year cycle where the four big outer planets, the gas giants, tend to come near to alignment, and that this is believed to possibly have an effect on the sun that would make a cycle of about that period. So this says that does appear to be going on, but there's debates about the mechanism. We could do that some other day. There's a whole interesting story there and a lot of people doing interesting research in that area.
We will do this another day, Ray, but please continue.
Yeah, so One of the ones that I want to mention most particularly is a cycle that this period, this one shows is 207.7 years. Now, that cycle is interesting. And there's another little cluster of cycles that are found between 55 and 60 years in that range.
Yeah.
And these two are found in the carbon-14. Now, I did another analysis, which is based on beryllium-10 isotope measurements. And this one runs for a period of, I think it's 7,400 years. And in this one, we get a period of 206.9 years, quite a good agreement with 207.7 years.
Yes.
And so this particular one I want to mention because, and in fact, a number of the other cycles are common between these two. One shows 351 years, the other 352. One shows 207 years, the other 208. One shows 104.7 years, the other 104.3. And one shows 86.1 years, and the other one shows two cycles of 87.6 and 84.7.
And if they had analyzed that for longer periods of time, I'm sure those numbers would have come even closer together.
Yes, because one period is slightly longer than the other, so they're not exactly matched. So we'd expect some small differences. But, of course, when you've got about 7,000 years data, you've got about 35 cycles of the 207-year cycle,
yeah,
which means that if a one-year difference there is only representing one-sixth of a cycle. So we can generally get accurate to about that much of a cycle over the data period we've got. And so they are in agreement. They're not giving a different period. They're just giving different estimates of the same period.
Yes.
Now, that cycle is very interesting because it's clear from both these cases that the sun has had peaks in activity in 1600 and 1800 and 2000, and troughs in between 1500, 1700, 1900. In other words, through the entire 20th century, the sun was getting more active. Now, we know that anyway. The solar records show that there was a big build-up in the sunspot number. Each cycle got stronger towards the end of the last century. Mm. In the latest cycle, incidentally, there have been quite a lot of reports saying, has the sunspot cycle stopped? The last cycle is very weak compared to those other ones. Now, this 207-year cycle tells us about that. It tells us that we get this building up for 100 years and then dying down for 100 years and building up for 100 years. There's a clear 60-year cycle in the climate record also, which is showing in these proxy on these solar ones as well.
Yeah.
I should mention that 60 years, I mentioned the outer planet alignments, 60 years is an interesting one in that regard because Jupiter and Saturn, which are the two biggest planets and have the biggest effect on the sun from gravitational influence, they come into alignment every 20 years. But because they meet in different parts of the sky as Jupiter overtakes Saturn, it's a one-third of an orbit around that this happens, but after three periods of 20 years, they come back to the same part of the sky. So after 60 years, you get the same configuration of those two. It's not as big an event as the 2,300-year cycle, but it does appear that the planets play some part in this. Now, if we look at the 60-year cycle in climate, we found that there was a big peak in temperatures on Earth around about 1940. And in fact, people talk about global warming and all of this, but in actual fact, many of the records in the United States for the highest temperatures occurred around 1941. You had the Dust Bowl in the 30s as the temperatures went up.
Yes.
And in 1941 was the peak. And many of those records have not been broken in recent times in the United States. So, in fact, the USA does show that that was a very high temperatures at that time. Then we had a decline to the 1970s, which is the time I mentioned that some of the institutes, like the English Institute that's been claiming that we're runaway temperature increase now, were at that time in the 1970s saying we're heading for a new ice age. Going back again 30 years before 1940 and 1910, there was also a temperature low. So we can see superimposed on this increase through the 20th century, we can see the zigzagging one of the 60-year cycle happening. So at about 2000, within a few years of 2000, both those cycles reached their peak.
Mm.
Now, in fact, Some of the records show that temperatures really haven't risen since that time. 1998, there was a big peak, and we haven't really gone past that.
Cycles may be at play, and sometimes these cycles are longer than a lifetime. We may remember our lifetime and say, well, it was cooler 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. But this is a significant point because some of the rhythms to which we're dancing are longer than our lives. So it's only through analysis in our minds that we can put the picture in play.
Exactly, yes. And so when we incorporate that cycle I mentioned of about 2,300 years, when we put that in the picture, that one has been rising for some time and will continue to rise for hundreds of years. So that's it's not such a strong one as some of those other two, but it will continue to rise. So my prediction for what it's worth is we won't see a lot happen in the next 30 years. It might get a little cooler, it might not. Well, when I say next 30 years, we're 10 years into already the next 20 years. But then we will see an increase again as the 60-year cycle turns up. And then it won't be till the end of the 21st century that the 200-year cycle will turn up. So then we will start to see some real warming because all three cycles can be going up together. So that's the perspective of cycles.
That's fascinating.
Incidentally, these cycles, it's generally referred to as a 208-year cycle. There are many reports of that in the literature on solar activity and on climate. This is a well-established cycle that has existed long before modern man started making a lot of carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
And you can trace it right through, and you can see that it was due to go up in the 20th century. So these things are beyond any disputing. But people are trying to say that climate change is due to just a human activity.
Well, I think it's understandable, Ray, because that people would assume that, because we tend to attribute cause and effect to simultaneous events, when in reality, two events happening simultaneously may be influenced by a third outside unseen events, such as the case with the lynx going after the snowshoe rabbits. There were cycle synchronies with their populations levels of their 9.6-year cycle with what was happening in the market at the same time. And not only were the cycles of the same duration that you could see in the market and the animal populations in another part of the continent, but they were peaking and troughing at the same time.
This is an important point, the cycle synchrony, yes. And the interesting one that was finally found on that is that ozone levels did rise and fall on that 9.6-year cycle, and that might be the clue as to what's happening, something to do with the atmosphere allowing different radiation and that may be affecting animal populations is going on.
Now, we've got to watch the clock to know what time it is. Folks, I want to remind you, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program here at blogtalkradio.com/cycles. And you can find the archive for this and other programs at our main site at kalarhythms.org, kalarhythms.org. Look there for information on upcoming shows. Okay, Ray, you were saying.
Yeah, one more thing on the climate change. Now, people have a debate. It's caused by the sun. It's caused by humans. It's caused by both. It's quite clear humans have an effect, and it's quite clear the sun has an effect. So the question is, what proportion is what, and which things are happening due to each, and what would be the consequences? If we do nothing, or even if we were to totally stop making more CO2, a lot of these things would be still going on. This dance of these things playing, the planets, the sun, and all of that, is still going to go on.
Yeah.
But another interesting one is the whole thing about carbon dioxide versus temperature. And the records that go back that have been shown by Al Gore, the graphs showing these things going back over the last, 800,000 years, he shows how they go together. But when a detailed analysis has been made of those, it's actually found that the carbon dioxide changes do not lead the temperature changes. They're the other way around. The temperature changes occur on average about 800 years ahead of the CO2 changes. Now, I decided to look at that on a shorter time scale because we have monthly data going back to the 1950s, both of carbon dioxide measurements at Mauna Loa, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, in Hawaii. And we also have measurements of the temperature of the Earth, the global temperature, including the sea, which is very important because it plays a big part. And we've got monthly figures for those for that period of the 1950s to the present. Now, I took those, and of course you get seasonal effects. So in order to remove seasonal effects, I use the change over a 12-month period. That means it's the same time in the season each time.
Yes.
And then I smooth 12 months together as well. So anything due to seasons is totally gone out of this. And I do exactly the same thing both to the temperatures and the CO2, and I plot a graph of them. And guess what? They show very, very similar oscillations, even to the point of when one has a bigger peak, so does the other. But the funny thing is, which one leads? The one that leads is the temperature, not the CO2. So if CO2 is causing temperature changes, how does it manage to cause them to happen 6 months earlier than the CO2 change?
Well, this doesn't become clear until we do the analysis. We can't just look on the surface of things. We have to look underneath. And if you have any questions about looking underneath the surface for cycles and you want to call in and ask a question to Ray, we're here at 347-884-9593. Well, we have these cycles moving in nature. We're finding that the long-term analysis shows that some of the things we see, they can have a small effect, like waves on a rising tide and a declining tide, because there is also larger rhythms, cycles within cycles within cycles, the mysterious forces that trigger events. These are invisible things. We know there's cycle synchronies, things moving, peaking, and falling at the same time, things that don't seem to be related to each other, marching to the same drummer, but we don't understand that. When we see them happening together, we attribute cause and effect, but there are from the unmanifest comes the manifest, and there is a rhythm in the music of the universe, and it's harmonic, and we're all dancing to it, even when we can't name the tune. Wouldn't you say, Ray?
Yes. On the harmonic one, we quite often find, Dewey found cycles that were related to each other in proportions, harmonic relationships, musical harmonic relationships. One of the ones that, if you get the CATS program in the data, there's one series in there which is, they measure the ultraviolet output of the sun.
Yeah.
Now, the ultraviolet is beyond the blue end. It's the more energetic part of the sun spectrum.
Shorter wavelengths.
Yeah, shorter wavelengths, yeah. And it's considered to be a very interesting part of the spectrum to look at. And there's some data there that for about 2.5 or nearly 3 solar cycles that we've got in that CATS collection. And I'm looking here now at the spectrum of this one because it's particularly unique in that it actually shows this whole harmonic structure, and it shows many harmonics over quite a wide range. And it shows a pattern that shows these proportions of 2 and 3 exactly in the way that the harmonics theory predicts. But the interesting thing is we start first from the sun's rotation period, which this comes up as a 26.74 days in the ultraviolet spectrum. It repeats after that interval. But then it shows another peak after 13.55 days, which is very close to half of that one. And it shows a weaker one after 8.92 days, which is a third of the original, and then a relatively strong one again at 6.84 days, which is a quarter. And at a fifth and a sixth of the period, it also shows peaks in the spectrum, that there's more repetition, and at an eighth. So we're seeing a bunch of harmonics. Now, that can be relatively easily understood by the standard theory of what's going on in the sun, because as the sun rotates, it has got a north pole and a south pole, but the equator is not just a circle around it where the neutral zone is. The neutral zone actually is like a tennis ball scene. It goes up a bit, down a bit, up a bit, down a bit as it goes around the sun's equator. So normally we get hit as the sun rotates. The neutral zone is the part where charged particles from the sun can race out in a straight line. If it's in the north or the south part, they get curved by the magnetic field back to the sun, so they can't reach the Earth.
Yeah.
So 4 times in every rotation of the sun, normally, this varies, we get hit by the charged particles. And that, because of the fact the Earth is moving with the sun a little bit, that 26 point something day period becomes 28 days, and every 7 days we get hit by a lot of charged particles. Now, this actually shows up as there is a weather cycle of 7 days, and it also, I believe, is the origin of the week, because people say it's to do with the moon, but it's not. The moon's cycle is 29.5 days, not 28. But the solar cycle is 28 days.
Oh.
Now that part can be understood in terms of those things we know about the sun. But the spectrum also shows another period of 51.8 days, which is double the sun's rotation period, and other ones at 4 times, 6 times, 12 times, and 24 times the sun's rotation period. Now, I don't think there's any mechanism by which those periods can be produced from the sun's rotation. It's got no way of counting that it's done 12 or 24. There's nothing there to make that happen. So I think it's coming the other way. I think those periods are coming down from the longer ones, and the sun's rotation period happens to be one of the universal cycles. These other cycles that I mentioned, that were 6 or 12 times that, include periods which, and the 24 one, include periods, some of which were mentioned by Dewey. You actually link into there to the 3.39-year cycle, or 40.68-month cycle, which is in the stock market. And these periods fit that extremely accurately. And these other periods that I mentioned there have been reported by astronomers in a number of different solar phenomena, including such things as how many neutrinos come out. So the very core of the sun's oscillating with these cycles. And that's showing up both in stock markets and in geomagnetic things. So it does show the linkages between these things, that there is cause and effect going on here. And I believe that it's caused by all these people, like I read that original statement by Chizhevsky, and Dewey very reluctantly came to the same conclusion. I think he was a very cautious man in the way he arrived at his conclusions. He didn't have flights of fancy, as some people do. He went and got advice, and he used proper statistical methods to say there's no doubt that this is linked to this, even though this one's beyond the Earth and this is on the Earth. So it has to be. So that's why he talked about these cycles forces.
As empirical as he was, he found planetary and solar correlations, the cycles of nature being manifest in human behavior, which is metered on a daily basis in the market. My goodness.
Right. Now, you got any questions from callers?
I don't think anybody wants you to stop talking, Ray. I don't think anybody wants you to interrupt with anything. So, well, we're finding harmonics in nature, and at the same time, we're starting to understand and have the tools to measure what's happening with the solar winds, what's happening with the radiation. The sunspot cycles does have a correlation. It's an 11-plus-year cycle that we've seen manifest in the market. The gas giants are forming a dance between Jupiter and Saturn that produces a 60-year cycle that changes the barycentric motion, our relationship to the sun. And there's no question that the celestial bodies around us are influencing us in terms of radiation, of gravity, of cycles that are manifest in the market. Whether you believe in astrology or not, you got to believe in astronomy, because those bodies are there, they're moving, and we're in the dance being influenced.
Yes,
we certainly are. Once again, the correlation between behavior and nature.
I know you'd like to have some economic and markets and stuff things. So let's go a little bit to that area. One of the longer cycles that people became aware of was the Kondratiev cycle, which is usually reported as about 54 years or 53 years. There's a graph from the Foundation for the Study of Cycles showing this cycle from 1820 to 1920, showing two cycles, a dip and a rise, and a dip and a rise, and interest rates. And then I just took the data from Katz that shows the period up to 2010, shows how we've done another cycle then, rose up to a maximum 1982 in interest rates and fallen back down again at a very low interest rates now. Now, according to my calculations, we're right at the low of that now, that interest rates will go up for the next 27 years, more or less. When I say up, I mean up. Obviously, it will have oscillations in it, but the general trend will be up. So interest rates probably at their lowest they're going to be for a very long time.
So when we're analyzing the data of every day, a lot of market analysis is just merely based on what the market is doing, because that's what your data is. And then you have to project. But there's anomalies, aberrations, there's influences, there's a confluence of things happening at the time with temporal effects and so forth. And that can throw you off because people try to start with the data only and then derive the cycle from that. But once you realize that there are correlations to fixed things that you can understand, you might find that the data that you're following is going to be with a trend for a while, it's going to fluctuate. But you know what happens when there's an aberration that pulls these the indicators away from the cyclic influence? They revert back to the river's course and come to it. But the river's course is not clear until we come back to it, we overcorrect in the opposite direction, then we get back to the stream, stick with it for a while, try figuring out what the cycle is when all you have is the data. Look for the correlations in the cyclic analysis and what's happening in nature and what's been happening over long term. Find the harmonic relationships and you will see the invisible forces that trigger events.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of things in what you just said, David. I want to try and pick up three if I can remember them. One is, the harmonic ones. This one of interest rates shows a very clear 53-54 year cycle. In the data of commodity prices that I have got with the Katzbergen, a lot of the we've got some very long-term ones there, going back some to the 1500s, some even to the 1200s from Europe, of commodity prices over many hundreds of years, and these quite often show a period around 53, 54 years, but they also quite often show a 27-year cycle of half that, so we're getting that harmonic showing up there.
Fractal universe.
Yeah, and this thing you said about them coming, that sometimes it wander off. Now, occasionally, the things do seem to wander off from what the cycle was supposed to do at that point, and as you said, Dewey said, if it's a real cycle, it will pull back into the original rhythm again. And we see many cases of this where the thing goes just funny for a little bit and then comes right again and stays right again for a long time. So that is an important one. But then when you said it's sort of like the pendulum, pulling back, that whole thing is the reason for cycles, in my view, all can be understood if we think in parallels to physical systems. If we get a pendulum when we pull it to one side and we let it go, mm-hmm. The gravity is pulling it one way and it accelerates towards the middle, overshoots, gets slowed down by gravity as it goes out the other side till it stops, then it reverses the process until it finally comes back to the original position or just slightly short of it. And this oscillation that goes on is whenever there's a displacement of something and a force pulling it back towards the middle, be it a pendulum or be it a spring or be it anything, if we get a weight on a spring and pull it down and let it go and it bounces up and down, all these things, any physical system we make has this sort of property. When we go right down to the atomic level or molecular level, molecules have frequencies which are just these same things. When the bonds in a molecule get pushed out of shape, the thing springs back and it overshoots and it comes back again and oscillates.
Yes.
All the things we can see or hear, light is an oscillation of the electromagnetic field that's overshooting, getting pulled back, overshooting, getting pulled back. And that everything in the universe is doing this. From the largest things, the motion of the planets is pulled by the sun around and it gets you on the other side, it gets pulled back again. So it's going backwards, forwards, around. Everything in the universe is doing this, oscillating away. Some things, it's a very clear oscillation, when we play a note, a very clear single note. Yeah. Other things are more like someone sat on the keyboard. You get a lot of notes together, so you have to get a lot of data before you can split them out and say, oh yes, there's this a number of different cycles interacting here.
Before it becomes clear, and often there's more than one cycle at play. So, we tend to flatline all of the data and give it a flat analysis and say, well, there's so many years in between recessions or so many years between wars in this region, and that may be true. But that in itself might not be a true cycle because there could be a confluence of numerous cycles influencing that. And as we try to figure out what any one of these cycles are, much less the many that are influencing us at one time. We're working with the data that's moving with a homeostasis. That's where it goes too far one way, comes back and corrects, goes too far the other way. And so it's like that progressive jazz note that's never played by the band as all the instruments play around it. Set the thermostat on your wall to 72 degrees. Your house isn't 72 degrees very much because it's going to, the furnace stays on till you get up to 74. Thermostat says, oh, too much, turns it off. Now the furnace is off, and you drop down to 70, and it says, oh, time to kick it back on again. And you, yes. And you watch that for a while, and you go, hey, it's hovering. It's set for 72 degrees. Well, that's great. If that's the only thing, and if everything were that simple. But when you get to the elements of it, sometimes the very elements are that simple, because from simplicity comes complexity.
Yes.
In the world of cycles, harmonics.
Yes. Cycles. Dewey said that everything that had been studied, and he's talking about thousands of cases of data collected and looked for cycles. He says there are cycles found if you get enough data and you get some sort of regular thing occurring there. I want to add one more rule to that.
Yep.
Even the things that we call regular cycles, if we actually examine them more closely, we discover they're not perfectly regular. For example, the cycle of 40.68 months that was found in the market.
Yes.
Now, I found papers in the Foundation for the Study of Cycles archives where somebody had looked at these over an 80-year period, and it's clear that the cycle comes a little earlier, a little earlier, a little later, a little later, a little earlier, a little later, a little later, and there's a cycle in that. And that cycle is about 23, 24 years. Now, this person attributed it to the to being the 22-year solar cycle, but in fact it's not. There's enough data to show that the period is longer than that. It's more like between 23 and a half and 24 years. It's a bit longer. But you can see this, and there's an even longer cycle, like 70 years or more, and probably 71 years, of them getting earlier and later again. Mm. And so in a conference in the 1990s at the Foundation, a number of different people were giving predictions about the stock market at that time, and we were just right at the low. We were in the month of the low that the conference was held, and a number of people were able to give a forecast that it was about to turn up now. But I gave a slightly different one. I said it's going to turn up now, but this next cycle will be a slightly slower one. The peak will be a bit later. And it was. And that was based on this longer cycle of the modulations of the cycle. So everything has cycles in, even cycles. Cycles have modulations. And
they're wobbly.
Why is that?
Why are they wobbly?
well, let's think about it. If we look at the motion of the Earth around the Sun,
yes.
It's going around and around the Sun, but the Earth is also going, the Moon is going around the Earth, and it causes the Earth to wobble about a bit from that. So if we look at the Earth's motion, it's not doing just a motion around the Sun, is doing a little wobble in relation to the Moon as well. And the other planets influence it as well, and they cause a wobble.
Nice.
And so everything is influenced by everything else. It's just a question of degree. And in most cases, if we look more detailed, for example, the light coming from a sodium lamp is a yellow light. And if you look at that, if you get a spectrum of that, you'll see this very bright line in the yellow part of the spectrum that it's issuing at. But if you magnify and magnify it, you find, oh no, it's two lines. So it's actually a modulation. It's actually a cycle that's coming and going and moving around as it goes. And then if you magnify it to more and more, you discover each of those two lines is broken up into more. And even the light that's given off by sodium, it's not a regular oscillation. It's a slightly irregular oscillation. And there are wobbles to the wobbles, and the long-term wobbles can be very long. They can actually be not just the wavelength of light. They can have actual physical dimensions to them in centimeters and so on. So, for example, hydrogen, the light of hydrogen, has an oscillation which is also can be picked up as a radio signal at 21 centimeters. So there's a 21-centimeter modulation of anything to do with hydrogen.
Huh.
The same thing exists in every type of cycle. There's no, I don't believe there's any exceptions to that.
Okay. Okay. So there are influences from the abstract reality. There are abstract principles at play, but yet when they manifest in the world of physical causality, then you have the temporal forces adding to that. Yet the principles remain. And so it's constantly both of them interacting together. Now, Socrates said of the abstract reality, if you imagine a perfect triangle in your mind, it could, you know, each side is equal length, each vortex is 60 degrees, and is perfect. Now, when you go to build that out of wood, you're going to think of each length being exactly the same, but you're going to cut it, and your cut is going to be slightly off, and you're going to assemble it, and then there's the, you know, texture of the wood making the corners not exactly right. But you're modeling it on the abstract reality. He maintains that the abstract reality existed, but that in the actual manifestation, which is modeled on these concepts, you have the imperfections and the variation. And yet, in the substratum of the universe, the abstract reality is there. You have principles of motion with gravity, inertia, and all of the principles of physics. They have abstract realities. These are rules. These are laws of physics. And then they interact together, like you said, to varying degrees. And so there we have the dance. Everything is unique. Everyone is unique. Every experience, every time, every moment, and everything to come is unique, yet the patterns remain.
Yes. Although we have cycles, they aren't like just like clockwork. You know, they're not, it's not boring. You know, it's a symphony. And that's, you know, some of the things that we can see in that, it really is music. When I first did my analysis in the 1970s of the New Zealand economy, I had found four cycles periods, which I then noticed that if I multiplied those cycles periods 1 by 4, 1 by 5, 1 by 6, 1 by 8, I got 35.6 years in each case, very close to. Mm-hmm. And that fitted with Dewey's pattern. I had most of the cycles I'd found, he had found earlier, right? But I didn't know about him at that stage.
Independent
but
discovery.
Then I collected corn prices and analyzed those, and I discovered that when I analyzed the corn prices, I could find a whole lot of different cycles present, and that they corresponded to most of the white notes over two octaves of the piano, if we think of it as,
yeah,
plus two black notes, E flat and B flat, along with them present. All the white notes were present at least one octave, and it was exactly as if someone had sat on the keyboard of a piano, you know, and yeah, that was the oscillation it had. And so, and then I realized this 4-5-6-8 is a major chord in music. That was actually playing the major chord, the New Zealand economy. And so this whole thing with music is interesting. I just came across a thing yesterday which was called something about bird brains. If you do a search for bird brains, there's a video, and it's really interesting because it goes into the sounds. It's quite a fascinating thing in its own right, but if you're a cycles person, it's even more so. And they actually had slowed down the sounds of birds because they just do a thing that goes, and when, yep, they slowed it down, it was, and there was all this music in it, you know, but it was so fast that we just heard it as a blur.
Word diminuated by and, scale, yes.
And guess what? When one of the ones that they slowed down went, da 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 da, da 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 da.
You think Beethoven picked up on that?
Yeah, well, he doesn't mention that, but they mentioned that Mozart mentioned that one of the things he did was based on some sounds of creatures making calls, and he had slowed them down. So Beethoven probably did. But it's fascinating, that whole area. The sounds of nature slowed down. They do ones
and
from whales.
There is a fascinating recording out
crickets,
there.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's
And whales. And they do the sounds of planets slowed down or sped up and so on, of the radio waves picked up from them. And some of these things sound like symphonies. I've heard of ones relating to the aurora also. So a lot of natural processes have got fantastically rich musical structures in them as well, where we can see this whole thing going on.
So it really is a musical universe, or to coin a phrase, the dance of Shiva is at play,
yeah,
for every season turn. For everything. We're in the last minute and a half here on the Cycles of Change Radio, speaking with Ray Tomes from the Cycles Research Institute. We covered a lot of fascinating territories about nature, the sun, the planetary influences on us, the wobbly universe, how it influences the economy, cycle synchronies, of how we can find animal populations correlating with peaks and falls in the market. So whatever you're doing in life, whether you're a trader, whether you're planning your own business, whether you're just living and learning, cycles is part of everything within us and around us. Ray Tomes at cyclesresearchinstitute.org has a marvelous site with lots of information that you can look up. You can go in there, browse around. I recommend that you do that. You can send your questions in to Ray, learn more about what they're doing in this vital research. Ray, thank you so much for sharing what you have here. We're certainly going to invite you back on the Cycles of Change radio program.
Thanks very much, David. Yes, I look forward to coming back, and perhaps we can talk more about harmonics and subtle energies and the wave structure of matter and many other things.
Ray, thank you so much. Ray Tomes from the Cycles Research Institute here on the Cycles of Change radio program. Find this archive and more at blogtalkradio.com/cycles, where we will bring you these shows, archive them, to keep you apprised of upcoming programs. I'm David Katzmeier, your host. Thank you for joining us tonight on the Cycles of Change radio program. Hey, Ray, you still